gentlemen, boys and ghouls, step right up. Behind this curtain lies a ghastly concoction of delight, horror, fantasy, and terror. Your every wish is our command. Your every whimsical desire brought to life. But I'm warning you, there's always a price. Welcome to the greatest show on earth!
Okay, everybody, welcome to this week's edition of the Kurt and Jeff Show. I'm Kurt.
And I'm Jeff.
It's been a long time since we actually recorded over here at Jeff's house. We had to work a lot and stuff was going on, so we didn't get a chance to tape. Good thing we had a bunch of episodes banked up. We're going to go ahead and continue Jeff's life story here on this episode. The way we got it worked out is if we get two more episodes, this episode and one more out of your life story, then I can post the Rocky Horror Picture Show interviews that we did next, and it'll come out the week before they go the live show is. So that'd be good PR for them.
For those of you who live in our area,
right?
They perform once a month at the State Theater, usually about the third week, I believe, third Friday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
A really awesome show, really entertaining. So if you're in the area, it's only $8 to get in there. Have a good time. And they sell booze.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who need that motivation.
And they give the survival packs there, too. That's $2 for them. You can throw stuff, toast, and cards, and all that good stuff in there. They get you wet, everything.
Ah, you said wet. Anyways, back to my story. Mm-hmm. It's been roughly 5 weeks since we
left off.
Since we left off and finished off with my story. So if I repeat anything, bear with me, because I'm old and can't remember shit. And, you know, you heard my episode about the drug shit. That fucked up my short-term memory big time. So I will forget some stuff I've talked about.
You may also hear some banging and noise in the background. His wife is out there working on the patio. So she may come in and be hammering some nails or running a drill. We're not professional. We don't mind. We'll cut out what we can. If not, let it run.
We're unprofessional. And we're not politically correct either. We don't care. We don't give a shit. And it's our opinion, and fuck you about yours.
Pretty much.
Anyways, I believe I left off with the dick smash story, right?
That was the last one you told?
Okay, what else did I talk about, negative-wise? Have I?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay, well.
I mean, we did your drug years and the dick smashing story, and that was it.
Yeah, my drug years actually coincided with my military. That's where I learned it. Thanks, shipmates. When you're out at sea, you get bored. You look for things to do. This was back before Nintendo really took off, so there really wasn't much to do out at sea. If you're not working, you're off work. And if you're off work, there's only so many things you can do out there. Then you look for things.
Love your semen.
And fuck you, Kurt. You're a dick, man.
You just said you look for stuff to do at sea. I mean, hey.
Hey, you know what's long, black, and full of semen? A submarine.
You and your sea monkeys.
And that was a racist joke that I will not do. That was something we did off the podcast.
Yeah.
You can imagine where it probably went with that. He said that, and I just spouted something off the top of my head, and we just both lost it. Well, and, you know, they call sailors motherfuckers, and we call Marines father rapers, and that really pisses them off. But I joined the military. Actually, I joined in 85. I hit the delayed entry program August of 85, and I graduated the very end of May of 86, and I believe it was 8 or 10 days after I graduated, I left for boot camp. So I was actually enlisted and active in the military from 86 to 91. I went in for a journalism rating, which is a 4-year plus a 1-year extension, so it's a 5-year enlistment. I got my journalist rating, but we had to do an additional 4-week course after you graduated from the journalism school And I was pretty disillusioned with their version. One, I'm 18. I don't like authority. And when you do any kind of journalism in the military, whether it be broadcast, print, or anything like that, you are told what you're going to say. Mm-hmm. And you write your story accordingly, and they either approve it, disapprove it, cut it up, whatever, but it's not... it's not true journalism, because you're not free to express any kind of news. Any kind of news you did had to be a certain way, and come across a certain way. You know, I understand some of it morale-wise, but sometimes there's, you know, a good story out there, and you can't tell it the way it should be told. It's basically censored. And it's censored 3 or 4 times before it actually gets printed. It goes through several people who go through it, and they'll censor what part they don't like. Mm-hmm. And so I was going through that, and through that course, and they like to quiz you on the current events. And they would do this every day after lunch. School was down at Fort Ben Harrison in Indianapolis, so they expected you to read the Indianapolis Star over a 1 hour lunch, front to back, and then they would quiz you on random stories that appeared in the fucking paper. And I hate that. Because mm-hmm. you're talking a 30, 40 page newspaper, and they'll ask you some minor story on fucking page 36. That you probably didn't look at because it didn't have a major headline. You know, you hit the major headline once you figure out what it would be, and they wouldn't. They hit something small. Well, one day, and if you failed it, then you got like an essay kind of...
extra homework for you.
Yeah, extra homework to do. And so I failed by one question one day, and they wanted me to do a... what was it? 8-page report on the military of New Zealand. Yeah, exactly. So I did the ultimate sin in journalism and basically plagiarized. I just wrote it down word for word out of a book, and I did not quote the book as a source, therefore it's plagiarism. And so I went, had the XO, they stripped me of my rate, just made me a straight seaman. And so then I was there at the school for another month waiting for my new set of orders, and worked in the mail room and worked as a receptionist for the senior chief, who was basically over the Navy section, because this was a multinational base, and they had all 5 services there. Well, actually all 4 in a Coast Guard, but Coast Guard likes to think they're an actual service. And during a time of war, they are. Otherwise, they're Department of Transportation, so fuck them. and then I got my orders for the USS Lexington, which was a World War II aircraft carrier. I believe it was launched off in 1942, I believe. The old Lexington was sunk, and... the ship was getting ready to be launched off. I can't remember what it was going to be, like the Washington or something like that. They sunk the Lexington, so they renamed it the Lexington and sent it back out to the West Coast. It was an aircraft carrier, by the way, a World War II aircraft carrier. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Short-term memory, all fucked up. So they relaunched it, and the Japanese, being superstitious, freaked out about it. And so it earned the nickname the Blue Ghost, because they knew they sunk the Lexington, this one come in, and we just kicked the shit out of them with it. At the time when it launched off, it was one of the newest aircraft carriers. When I was on it, it was the oldest aircraft carrier. So, but it come out there, and part of the reason ships are painted haze gray is way off in the distance on the horizon. That haze gray color actually blends in with the horizon, with the, like the fog of the horizon. So you can barely make it out. So it looks like a ghost ship. And so that's why part of the reason they nicknamed it the Blue Ghost. And Even though it was Haze Gray, they called it Blue. Brew. It was Brew. And there's my racism
today. Leave it to us.
But once I got onto it, actually in 1968, I believe, it was converted to a training carrier. And was based out of Pensacola, Florida. And if you've ever watched Officer and a Gentleman, once they're done with their basic training that they go through, they made a comment that they ship them off to Pensacola, Florida. And Pensacola, Florida was where the pilot training school was at. And we were the training carrier. We were the ones that they got their training qualifications on, and they would actually learn to land on aircraft carriers with ours. Okay. At the time, the Lexington was the smallest aircraft carrier in the Navy. It was like 2 football fields in length, 910-foot total. And they basically figured if you can land on that, then you can land on the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger ones are, I think the biggest ones now are close to 1,200 feet. So you're talking an extra 300, another football length mm-hmm. on there. We had about 3,000 people stationed on there, and probably about 400 of those were women. I am not going to get into that. It's not that I disagree with them serving or being on there, but you take a ship out to sea that long, and there's just all kinds of women trouble out there. They're either really hoes.
Which we like.
Then you got the ones that just, and most of you women work with them in factories, the skanks, dressed like skanks so that all the guys drop whatever they're doing and do their work for them. And they just collect a free paycheck. Lots of those, too. And, we'll stop at that point. You get my drift about it. We had about 3,000 people. And you had all kinds of stuff to do out there. I mean, when there weren't flight ops going on, which was, we would do day qualifications and also night qualifications. So there were a few days when we were out at sea where it's running 24/7 and constantly ships or planes taking off and landing. So there was a lot of noise out there. But sometimes when they wouldn't, either when it's too windy or there's actually such a thing as not enough wind for them to take off. I mean, you can get down some parts of the Gulf and the water, there's no waves. It's just glass smooth. And we're just cruising through there. There's absolutely no wind. And we had a broken prop. We had two great big, like 24-foot brass props,
mm-hmm.
Which are the propellers that spin. Yeah. And one of those was bent. It was bent or broke off. So once we got about 24 knots, that thing shook like a Cadillac that was out of alignment. And you couldn't keep anything on the wall or on the tables. It just shook so bad, everything just fucking rattled right off. So if there was no wind, we couldn't actually get going fast enough to be able for them to take off, which usually extended our time out because they got to get so many hours out there. And until they do, we stay out until they do. but when they weren't running, the flight deck had basketball courts, probably 6-7 different basketball courts set up. We had actually had our own, like a game room, mm-hmm. Had a lot of video, probably about, 8 or 10 video games and like great big sectional couches all over where guys get together and women and play D&D and shit like that. We had a big screen TV down there. They have what they call, it's called a sight system, and mm-hmm. it's an onboard entertainment area, and the machine's probably about 6 foot tall, about 12 foot wide, and about 3 foot deep. And it contains 2 radio stations, plus the armed forces networks. And then you also have 3 TV channels on the ship that you also run from that. And they would send media packages with different videotapes, pretty much up-to-date stuff on TV and whatnot. And you had one guy, and this is what I was training for when I fucked up and got stripped of my rate, was to run the sight system.
So it basically like take like newer TV shows or something, send it in, you could watch that on there?
Well, the Navy would send it to us.
Right.
So it was usually maybe a week or two behind what was actually on TV. For us, it wasn't that bad because we'd only ever, because we were a training carrier, we pull out basically about anywhere from 21 to 30 days at a time, and then we'd be in port for a month and a half. So going back and forth. But you get to the other other ships that are actually out in the ocean and whatnot, and these guys would be out 2-3 months. Maybe with a port of call for 2 or 3 days where they pull in somewhere. But for the most part, the newer ships are so big that they can stock up for several months at a time, where we were one of the smaller ones. We could only go out. I take that back. I was wrong. At 14 to 21 days normal, and then once a year we would have to go out for 30 days. And when we went out for 30 days, we'd go out for about 2-3 weeks, and then we would have to restock up. We'd have to pull in somewhere and restock up everything because of our size.
You guys wouldn't like drinking your own piss or nothing?
No. They have their own generation stations on there where they can pull in the salt water and convert it. Now, if one of those fucked up, they could use the jet fuel, which was JP5. It's the jet fuel. If need be, they could run the ship on it. It's kind of a combination of like diesel and like high octane gas. But they could also use that to. They tried to keep it out of the drinking supply, but they had no problem running it through for the toilets and showers. And that shit stung like a motherfucker when you took a shower.
You figure for toilets and showers, you could just use regular seawater or whatever, couldn't you?
No, because the seawater contains
the pipes and stuff.
Bacteria, and the salt would corrode the pipes really quick and really bad, and the salt content's really, really high in salt water. If you ever been to a saltwater beach, you know how you go swimming and sometimes get a mouthful of water, don't think anything of it. You're at an actual beach with seawater, you get a mouthful of that shit, and that's just nasty. And it'll also leave like a sticky film, like bad soap does, when you shower in it, and so you don't really get clean. And it'll strip the oils out of your hair and make your hair really, really dry. That's why a lot of beaches, when you go to an actual public beach with salt water, they have showers there to use after you get out. Not only that, but it's supposed to be filled with all kinds of bacteria, so if you have any open wounds or cuts or anything like that, they can get infected. However, I found the opposite. If I had open cuts or anything, I got salt water on it, that shit healed right up. So, and a lot of people were like that. So I don't know if they were bullshitting us on that or not, but that shit got in your any of your other stuff. It was just nasty.
Maybe you're a mutant.
Could be. That'd be cool. But anyways, so I was on this station on the aircraft carrier. I was on there from 87 to 91. Shit, I forgot where I was going. Hey, fucked up. I basically went with the rate of bosun mate. I made B3, which is an E4. Which is about halfway up the scale as far as military goes. They go all the way up to
E5 is what, general, isn't it? I believe.
A what?
An E5, isn't it the general rank?
No.
I just did some research on this stuff, so that's why I was
wondering what I was looking at. You had E and you had O. E was enlisted, O was officer. So an enlisted grade of E4, which in the Navy was a third class petty officer, in the Army I believe it was a sergeant.
So that's right, sergeant.
Sergeant. And then once you got to E5, I think you got staff sergeant. I'm not positive on this, right. So that might be inverted.
I think it was 5 with sergeant or something like that, if I remember right. Because I was just doing the research on it, looking up. The guy said he was something 03 or something.
Okay, and 03
is he was a sergeant.
No.
When I started looking, sergeant was E5.
An O3 would be the officer rankings, which is
captain, I believe.
No, O3 would be. You had lieutenant commander, captain. And then I think after, once you get up into the fives, you got your generals, okay, or admirals, mm-hmm, depending on which branch you are. Actually, I got a book down in my trunk, the original Blue Jackets training manual that you get issued in boot camp. I found one at a garage sale about a year ago. I paid like a buck for it. I snatched that up because those are hard to find. Mm-hmm. And it's got all the terminology and everything. The thing is probably about 4 inches thick, mm-hmm, and that's all your basic knowledge you need just as you enter in the military. And a big chunk of boot camp is spent learning literally out of that book. And then a lot of the other stuff that's in there, you would read up on when you train to go up in rank. Because when you got to be recommended for the rank first, and then you test for the rank, and then if you pass, you're granted the rank. And there's some fucked up shit. You know, a paintbrush actually has four different parts that have different names on it. It's not just a paintbrush.
Three.
So, it's...
You'd think the bristles, the metal band, and the handle.
Yep, but that's not how they do it.
Oh.
You got the bristles, and you got the tip of the bristles, which is a different name than the actual bristle. Then you got the metal band, then you got the handle. Each one has its own fucked up name.
And it's a paintbrush. That's all I care about.
And I had to take that on the test. I passed that on the test, but right now I couldn't tell you what the hell it is. That's just basic knowledge you don't use outside of it unless you work at Sherman Williams or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they know.
Probably not.
You know, they say, well, what? You
it's
know,
just like anything in school,
inch.
You know, you do all that math and science and stuff that you're never going to use in your real life, you know, unless you take a specific field.
Well, and some of it's neat when you learn it in the military. I had to learn a bosun pipe, which, if you watch Star Trek, mm-hmm, you hear them, they always got the little thing, thing. And we had an actual bosun pipe, and that's an actual call. And you would get over the 1MC, which is the announcement system for the whole ship, up there on the bridge, and you push it, and you'd actually blow the whistle in there. And there's certain ways you hold your hand and move it and whatnot to change the tone.
Cool. Did they have the transporter ship?
No, they didn't have that yet. Well, yeah, elevators, escalators, and stairs.
No, I need them.
That's the only transporters we had.
Your feet, huh?
Yep, your feet. The oldest kind of transportation there is out there. But you learn that, but, you know, once you get out of the military, I don't even have my bosun pipe anymore. I don't know where it went. It's like a $40 fucking thing. Mm-hmm. And then you had to make your own lanyard for it. And, I mean, some of these guys went real elaborate with it. I was lazy, so I paid a guy $20 to make one for me.
Did you use a shoestring?
No. You actually had to decorate have a lanyard and have it decorated. You usually made it out of white, and then you would dye it black. Because they wouldn't sell you a black cord. They'd sell you a white cord, and you had to fucking dye that shit. But there were guys that made a living off that on the side. Mm-hmm. You know, they charged, depending on how fancy it was, a basic one would run you $20, a real nice fancy one would run you $40-$60. And these guys could pop one out in 1 or 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're out at sea, you got nothing to do, you hit one of these guys up, and this was a small business for them on the side. They made a killing on that shit.
It was the same thing when I was in prison. People were doing stuff like that. They were making belts and wristwatch, yep, bands and all that stuff they could make down in the shop. And, you know, even people that could draw, they're doing, like, Christmas cards and stuff like that and drawing,
yep,
pictures for you.
Yep.
Pay them in stamps or, you know, fish, and they're good.
Yep. I was...
You make good money doing that. Some of my roommates in the Army, they're bringing in $200-$300 a month doing that, which is a lot when you're in prison. You know, I mean, you can only spend $300 a month.
Right.
You know, that's the most,
right,
they allow you to spend.
Well, and then, you know, there were all kinds of ways to make money out there, too. You know, like, I don't know if I said this before, but we had a smoke shop.
No, you didn't talk
okay.
about this.
Okay.
You told me before, yeah.
We had a smoke shop on board the ship, and once you...
And alcohol.
Only if you were out for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. So, well, first off, cigarettes. Mm-hmm. We had a smoke shop. It only opened once we hit international water. Once we hit international water, all taxes are dropped. You just pay for the basic thing. So a carton of cigarettes would run you $6-$7.
Mm-hmm. At the time, an imported run you, what, 15?
Yeah, something like that. They basically dropped in half.
They're like $60 now, a carton, so.
Yeah, but... what we would do, there was a few of us that didn't smoke, and we would disappear after seeing anchor, and we'd go get in line, open up, and we'd go down there, and we'd start buying up the stock they had. And, you know, you can mix that. You can just go down there with $60. You can get, you know, 10 cartons of cigarettes. Well, there you go, and you lock them up. And right about the fourth day, because smokers have no fucking self-control whatsoever, and they've killed everything they brought out. Mm-hmm. The two or three cartons they brought out, because they just chain smoke. Well, then you break it out in your locker. Hey, Jeff's got some. All right, $3-$4 a pack. About, yeah, it's about $3-$3.50 a pack. Fuck you, I ain't paying that. All right, well, your choice. I got them when you run out. And they always ran out. And about that fourth, fifth day when they're starting to jones and we still got, you know, 5-10 days left out of sea, they're willing to pay that $3.50. And so you make a nice chunk of money off smokers. Even better were the chewers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, you could soak them little motherfuckers. But they deserved it. They were nasty fuckers. They'd spit in cans everywhere. And fucking leave them everywhere. So fuck you if you fucking dip, you assholes.
They had what they called a twice-dip cigarettes when I was in prison. They would go around and wait for the CO to spit out his tobacco, and they would pick up that tobacco, dry it out, put it in a cigarette, and smoke it.
Oh, that's nasty.
That's some nasty stuff.
Oh, bleh.
Because you couldn't get cigarettes in prison when I was in there.
Well, see, and most of the chewers were Southern boys.
Mm-hmm.
Big old Southern boys, big old wads of fucking chewing their bottom lip, look like they got fucking punched with a big old cock in their face or something like that. And those guys would pay, you know, we charge them $5 for a canister just because you're nasty, you little bastards.
Mm-hmm. But, did anybody try to break into your locker to get the stuff?
Nah, we always moved it.
Oh.
One day it might be in your locker, one day it might be in your nether, because there was a couple of us that did it, so we kept in check. We moved it around. And for the most part, we didn't let anybody know where we kept it hid. You know, I also ran the paint locker. I had the only key to get up in the paint locker, so I could store them in there and hide them pretty good. And breaking in the paint locker would get you in some serious fucking trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Then if we were out for 30 days or more, we only did this a couple times when I was on there, for what they call carrier qualifications. We'd have to stay out so much time, whatnot. We were allowed to have what was called a steel deck picnic. So we get out in the middle of the ocean, we drop anchor, and the whole day was a day off for everybody, except if you stood watch, which was watch ran. When steel deck picnic went, they broke into 2-hour shifts, otherwise it was 4-hour. That way everyone could eat. They broke out the big ass grills to cook 100 burgers at a time and shit like that. They cooked burgers and hot dogs up on the flight deck, played football. That's stupid as fuck, you idiots.
What are they, hard deck?
Well, not only was it hard deck, but they used what was called non-skid, which is, it's like a...
Almost like a sandpaper, isn't it?
Yeah, it's worse than sandpaper. It's the when it's being laid down, yeah, it's like liquid sandpaper, but it's laid down such a way that it leaves ridges up. And some of those ridges might hit 1/4 inch. And you can't. If you fall on it, it's because it fucking stopped you when you're walking. And it will tear you up. And these assholes would be playing fucking football on that shit. Someone would always fucking fall and get fucked up really good. Skin up there, ripped all the skin off their back and shit. But they would also serve beer. And they would bring on kegs and kegs of beer. Well, each person got 2 tickets for a 16-ounce beer. So what we would do is we would go around, hey, you know, you don't drink. You want to get rid of your tickets? And most of the time they gave it to us. Sometimes they charge $1 or $2. So we gather up all the tickets, and we go around and sell the tickets for $5 a piece to all the alcoholics. And I'll tell you what, if you got a bad addictive habit, I have no problems fucking making a profit off of you.
Oh, hell yeah. That's the way you do it.
So we made a nice chunk of money doing that, too. Like I said, we only did it a couple times, but... Yeah, and some of the guys got in trouble for drinking too much. But, hey, I got my money. The other thing was find out foods that people really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And ramen noodles were freaking huge on there.
Mm-hmm.
The ready-made cups where you just put the water in and heat it up. And, we had what was, they call it a gee dunk, which is basically a snack shop. But after about, again, you hit about that 5-day mark, all the good food's gone.
Yep.
You know, you go down there, and everyone hits it early, and again, you don't pay taxes on any of it. There's no sales tax, nothing like that, and it's usually about what you would buy it at a discount store at the time. But they had shit like smoked clams and oysters and crackers and squeezed cheese and Oreos and all that. And so you go down and, you know, you get that stuff to snack on. While, again, so much out at sea, they start running low on that stock. Well, you find out what's popular and you stock it up in your locker before you go on. You bring it on with you, and then you can turn around and you can run a little snack shop out of your locker, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were all kinds of ways to make money off these people.
Oh, yeah.
Or gain favors. Again, I ran a paint locker, so
you
I know.
Your favors.
Hey, you know, get me a gallon of this, and I'll hook you up with, you know, mm-hmm. boots or coveralls or whatever.
Just like prison, like, and that's exactly what they do there. You have the shop guy that would stock up on the stuff and sell it out of his locker. And
yep. Well, it was just doing favors for people.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
How they do. You know, you do this for me and I'll do that. You know, they'd run laundry out there. If you didn't want to do your own laundry, I'd people do your laundry.
And getting flight deck boots, that was like scoring gold there, because those, even if you put in a request for shoes, it may take 2-3 months
mm-hmm.
for them to come in. And then if they didn't disappear, you know, you might get them. Same with coveralls. Coveralls were real popular out at sea because all you had to do was throw on your t-shirt and underwear and you slid into these things and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guys from the store, whatever, would come up there and say, hey, I need to get this. Well, you need to fill out the request thing and go get permission and all this. And fill out a request and get permission to get the paint and all that could take you 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys would say, well, I really need it. I don't have time to do that. Well, you know, what can you do for me? Mm-hmm. Well, I can get you a set of flight deck boots in the next shipment in. All right. Make sure I get it. And here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They were good on them.
Okay.
And for the most part, when I first started in the paint locker, I was just a worker up there.
Mm-hmm.
And your shoes and boots get fucked up really bad.
Mm-hmm.
They get covered in paint, glue, and that shit cakes on there, and you can't shine them and all that. And we had a first officer, can't remember his name. All requests had to get finalized through him. And I requested boots 3 different times, and he turned it down every time. He said, buy your own. I said, why? My job is ruining them. I should be issued new ones. And that's the rule. If your job ruins your clothes, then they're supposed to issue you new clothes to replace it for that. You know, if you fuck them up on your own, yeah, you fucked them up on your own, go get them. You know, and he's like, buy your own. I said, I can't. You know, there's $60-70 for a pair of them. I can't afford that. And it's my job screwing them up. And he refused to do it. So one morning, captain calls inspection.
Mm-hmm.
For the whole ship. And these are the only shoes I got. Because he wanted everyone in their work clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So I shined them up best I could, which looked like shit. Caked on and whatnot, and went up there for inspection. Captain comes up to me and says, boots are kind of fucked up. I said, yes, sir, they are. And he says, where do you work? I said, in the paint locker. He says, well, he said, that would explain all the different colors on there. He says, what, don't you have another pair for inspection? I said, no, sir. He says, why not? I said, I've requested officer such and such, and he was standing right next to the fucking, right next to the captain. I said, I've requested him 3 times, and he turned me down and told me I need to buy my own. He said, but those are being ruined from your job. I said, yes, sir, they are. He turned and looked at him. He says, you will have him a new pair of boots today. And he says, matter of fact, get him 2. He said, one he can wear that he can keep aside from inspection, and another pair to replace those. And that officer's face turned beet red, and I just had a smirk on my face like, challenge me, fucker.
Those are always the best conversations.
And, well, because the captain, he has a lot of visitors and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
so they go through a lot of paint. And those guys, we never made requests anything. If they needed something, we gave it to them right away.
Mm-hmm.
And the captain knew that. So he knew we took care of him, so he made sure to take care of us. And from that day on, he actually would come by the paint locker every every few weeks to check on everybody that worked in there, make sure we were issued new clothes and all that shit.
Nice.
Yeah, the captain was pretty cool. I'm trying to remember which. There were two captains on there. And for life, you know, this was 20 years ago, so I can't remember their names now. But that lieutenant was a dick. Everyone, no one was upset when he got his orders and left. Fucking prick. And he was one of those kind of officers who demanded respect. He didn't give it,
right?
But he expected to get it, and none of us would show it to him because he didn't earn.
Right.
He didn't earn the respect of. You know, you got to earn the respect of your people. I mean, certain positions command respect, but by the same time...
By the time they get to that position, they've earned it.
You know? They've earned it, and there's some of them. And, you know, he's pretty low on the totem pole. He was a lieutenant commander, so he was only... No, 01 is ensign, and you got lieutenant king. So he was on 03, which is basically an E3, which is a basic enlisted. Because you had... Seaman recruit, seaman apprentice, and then seaman. In the Army, you would have, I don't remember what their low rank is. Ground Pounder 1, Ground Pounder 2, Ground Pounder 3. So he would have been the equivalent of Ground Pounder 3. So pretty low.
We're back. We had to take a pee break. Or Jeff did.
I had to pee.
Got the bladder of an infant?
No, I got the bladder of a diabetic.
Mm-hmm. Letter of a diabetic and a dick of an infant, huh?
I never said that. I don't know. Ask Jen.
Hey, according to her, it was so small you never fucked her.
According to her, I never touched it. I stretched it for you. That's fucked up. Okay, anyways. Back to the Navy. Let's see.
She did like semen. Well, no, she didn't.
No, that made her gag. Oh, shit.
Hey, they've heard the stories. By now they know the inside joke.
You said inside joke. Let's see, I just finished the story with the officer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyways, let's see. Ah, nice. Silence.
Don't worry, I can cut it out.
See, when I first got there, they had actually already gone out to a sea cruise. And so they kept me there on the base. I was there for, about 5 days. I think I got there on a Monday and a Friday. They decided to go ahead and send me out to the ship. Mm-hmm. There was six or eight of us, I think. And they flew us out. So... We're in this big prop plane. It's the same one that brings their mail out to them. They got regular seats. So we're all tucked up in gear, and they got us pulled in real snug. And it was like about an hour flight out there. So we're flying out. You're looking out the window, and all you see are waves. And, when you're on a 910-foot carrier, you think this thing is huge.
Mm-hmm.
When you fly out to it in the middle of the Gulf, you find out it's not. We're looking out the window, and the pilot comes across. Says, we're approaching the ship. You know, we'll be landing in about 15 minutes here. If you look out, you know, your starboard side, which is your right side, you'll be able to see it. And look down, I'm like, where?
A kid just asked me what side was the starboard side of a ship.
Starboard is the right side, and port is the left. And actually, they use that in everything. Your left is starboard, your right is starboard, your left is port, and that's how they actually talk. So it's not just the ship. To your right, they always say it's on your starboard side or whatever. I'm actually not sure why. I've been explained to...
How does it make sense? If you're facing one way, that could be starboard. If you turn around, then the other side's starboard?
Starboard is always your right-hand side.
Right. So if you're and facing port is always
your left. It doesn't matter what direction you're pointing.
Mm-hmm.
Your right is always starboard. Your left is always port. Just like, it doesn't matter what direction you're saying. If I say it's on your right, it's on your right-hand side. It doesn't matter if you're facing north, south, east, west, whatever. Starboard is always right. Port is always left. But they just use it as a general term. I've been told before why. I can't remember. It's probably down in that manual. I'm going to have to dig that thing up and read it. But, looking out, we're looking for it. We're like, where? And it says, right on the starboard side. Look real close. And we look down, and there's this tiny little fucking dot in the water. We're going to land on that? and it was about 15 minutes in. You know, they're circling around because they're also doing the regular flight ops qualification, so they got to wait their turn. We come in. It's 910 foot long, but your stop is only about 300. So we're coming in, and it's cool. You know, it's one of the things that I can say that I've done that a lot of people haven't done, and that's fly out and land on an aircraft carrier. And we're coming in. They hit that arrest and a cable, and there's three different cables on there. They're all, I think they're 50 foot apart. So that way, you know, they got three chances to catch the hook. Because you only got a 6 foot hook that comes off the back of the plane. That's what catches that cable and fucking stops your ass. So when they come in, every plane that comes in to land has to hit full throttle when they hit it. So as they come in, they're speeding up. That way, if they miss a cable or something snaps, they're already at full speed and they can still take right off.
Take back off, yeah.
And sometimes what happens with jets is when those snap, the force will pull the jet and the jet will go straight up. Mm-hmm. And then, since they're... this was on my first day. Actually, we had a jet crash my first day. About getting out of that. Anyways, we come in. And we land, and that's a hard stop. Mm-hmm. We've got the X belt on, where you got two straps come together, and you buckle them in the front. And you literally come 12 inches forward off your fucking seat, and that thing's holding you in, and you're like, ah, ah, and then you snap back when it stops. And but I got there, flew on, landed. They sent some people up to gather us up, take us to wherever we were checking in at, whatever department, whatever. I had been there probably about 5-6 hours. And all of a sudden, man overboard comes across. I'm like, holy shit, I just got here. What the hell? We go up there, and a jet had come in, and his hook had snapped. And he went straight up, and he didn't have it all the way throttled. So we went straight up and just kind of kept going and flipped upside down. And as he was at straight vertical, he went ahead and ejected out. So then the plane just went up and fucking spun and come down and just fucking broke apart when it hit the water in pieces. This isn't the best part. It's like, holy shit, jet crash right away. Okay. When you're standing watch, and this is why you stand watch. Mm-hmm. You got one guy all the way up front on the island structure, about two levels above the island, which is, I think, the flight deck separates the levels. Anything below the flight deck is B, like B1, B2, B3, and that's below level. And I believe it goes 10 levels down before you're actually at the keel of the boat below water. And then up is considered O. And I believe the bridge was on 05 and the watches were on 07. So when you're up there, and you can go up at any time too during flight ops, they've got these big, thick, like half inch plexiglass up there and you can watch, sit there and watch it. They got these deflector things that come up behind the jet. So when they go full blast, it deflects the heat up. Well, it deflects the heat up to the 07 level. So if you're standing watch, all of a sudden you get this blast of air. It's like 110 degrees hits you. Mm. And, you can go up there and it's 80 degrees outside. And you get hit with that and when it takes off, all of a sudden it's cold. 80 degrees is cold out. Mm-hmm. But, so you got one in the forward and one in the aft. These guys have binoculars. They scan the horizon, they look for what they call contacts, which are other boats, oil rigs. And there's a surprising amount of oil rigs out there.
Oh, yeah.
And then anything like that. And they call down to a guy on the bridge and report what they see. It's at 02:30, which if you're standing up at the top, you just imagine a clock. You're at the 12 o'clock position. And so everything you report is centered just like a clock. So if you say it's at 0200 or whatever, then that's at the 2 o'clock position. So they know right away to go about 20% out and look. And most of the time, contact or control, which is CIC, it's called CIC, that's the guy with the actual radars and shit. Mm-hmm. They've already seen this shit for like the last half hour. They're just waiting for visual confirmation. And sometimes if it's not reported, they'll call up to you and say, hey, you got something such and such position. Oh, yeah, I do. We need to report that. But anyways, you got those two guys, and then you get to the back third of the ship, and you have a watch on the starboard side, one on the port side, one on the fantail, which is the very back where the props are at. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, we got people who get the Dear John letters and try and commit suicide, and they usually go to the fantail to try and drop in, thinking the blades are going to get them. It doesn't work that way. The blades are churning up so much, they hit that water, and they just churn right up. And, you know, they're all over whatever. Well, anyways, we got what they call saltwater flares. I can't remember what's in them, but they're probably about 2.5 foot and probably about 6 inches diameter. And they've got a piece on top that opens like the old pop cans where you just pop it mm-hmm. and then you peel the whole tab off. You drop it in the water, and as soon as the saltwater hits it, it has a reaction. It lights up a huge flare. And this thing will burn probably about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour or something like that. Okay, so this plane hits it, shatters. It doesn't blow up, so there's jet fuel all over in the water. Pilots out there in the water. The dumbass on starboard side throws in his fucking saltwater flare. You talk about people losing their damn minds, because there's jet fuel all over. It got lucky, none of it fucking ignited. But there's jet fuel all over out there, and he throws fucking flames out. And, This is all in my first 6 hours of being on board. I haven't even eaten yet. You know, it's just about dinner time and all this shit goes down. But it was pretty cool flying out there. And then eventually, I did probably my first year and a half on the ship, I did the rotation like that where I have to go out and stand on this. And most of the time, it's not too bad. They had stuff sticking out of the wall you could lean on and whatnot so your feet didn't get tired, and you're just standing out there in the breeze and whatnot. But when it sucked was during the winter months, because even though you're down in the Gulf of Mexico, mm-hmm. it gets fucking cold out there. It'll be 40 degrees, 35-40 degrees out there on the water, and you got spray coming up and hitting mm-hmm. you, and plus the wind, so it gets cold real quick. Hey, that noise from my wife coming in. Hi. You hear?
Yeah, got her on the
She podcast. Exists. She exists. I do have a wife. In order to get off, the only way you can get off that is, one, to move up a rank, and then you're stuck on the bridge if you get that duty. There's a couple other positions. You also went up onto the bridge, and you were what they call the lee helmsman. That's the guy that actually, he'll get his orders, and he takes the cranks that control the speed, and they'll go like one-third, two-third, whatever, and make the clang noise. That's the lee helm, is what that position's called. And then you'll also have the helmsman. Well, the helmsman is a different position and a different kind of watch altogether. And you got to get qualified for it. You got to do so many hours training on it before you actually become an actual helmsman. So I went ahead and went that route, got a helmsman. So I drove an aircraft carrier, and that was fun. And there's probably at any given time there's only about 20 people that can do that. And then you can also get what they call the carrier qualification for helmsman, and that's an even smaller list. That's probably about 6 people who can do that. So I went ahead and did that. And if you move up and do that, that's all you do your watch. You go up and you stand at the helm, and they'll tell you what heading to go, and you adjust it. I'll say something like starboard 15 degrees or whatever, so you crank the helm over and there's a little crank thing on there, it goes to like 30 almost dips you into the water. You don't like it. If you're going to go 20, I think it's 20 to 30, they actually put an announcement on so everyone braces themselves for the turn, because the 20 degree doesn't seem like much, but when it's an aircraft carrier, it looks like you're going to tip right over and go in, and that's when, like, down on the mess decks, they'll take everything off the table, or everyone will grab everything, because it will slide right off the table when they take a turn that sharp. But they'll say, you know, starboard 20 or 15 degrees, heading such and such and such and such. So you have two big gyros right above you with two headings on it, and you wait till the numbers get to that heading, and then you got to straighten it out. And you also have a magnetic compass that you got to check. And so you got to match all that stuff up. And usually, especially during flight ops, they like to go a straight line. So you'll get that matched up, and that'll get you at the speed, and you'll fucking cruise at that for 3 or 4 hours. So you can go a whole watch shift and not touch anything, just keep it steady. And some days, it depends on the current. Some days, you're constantly just adjusting the whole time, and other times, you can just hit it, and you pretty much just rest your hands there, and you stand there. And then they got, after that, you had aft steering, which is the emergency backup. If something were to happen to the bridge, they can transfer steering control down to the aft steering. Aft steering is right above the rudder, so you're way down at the bottom. And they have a left, or they have a port and starboard, either one. And they would activate those every night at midnight for an hour. They'd switch it over to starboard for an hour. Or they, hey, she put a towing tail on. Genie! Yeah, anyways. And then each night, they would alternate between the two. So if you had ass steering, that was a cakewalk watch. You went down there. You didn't have to get dressed up. If you're on a bridge, you had to wear your best clothes. That was the one thing about helmsman. You had, pressed shirts, all that shit. You get the ass steering, you wore coveralls and a t-shirt. You go down there. We'd play Game Boy, read books, whatever. Hell, I read the Bible back to back, or front to back, twice down there. And that was my Bible thumping time. And the only time you did anything was that 1 hour. And again, they had seats down there. Mm-hmm. So you'd sit down on the seat, steer, you know, like Detroit leaning. Got one hand up on the helm, cranking it to wherever it needed to be, you know, hands free to do whatever. So my last probably year and a half in there, I did the aft steering. I got on the aft steering watch bill, and that shit was just cakewalk. Mm-hmm. So I ran the paint. The last couple years, I ran the paint locker, and when we were out at sea, I had aft steering. I didn't do shit. Because by then, when I ran the paint locker, I had four guys that worked under me. So mm-hmm. They did all the work. All I did was look at the paperwork, check it off, do an inventory and tell them what to do. The rest of the time, I got high. That was my huffing ears, cranking some loud music and sit behind all the paint cans and shit, hiding back there and getting stoned out of my gourd. And so, the military, at least Navy-wise, is what you make it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a dick, it can be a bitch. And there are some guys that just excel at being dicks. Mm-hmm. You know, we work with a few. Everywhere you go, you work with a few. And what I mean by excelling being dicks, most cops are ex-military. So that should fucking explain a lot for you right there. Mm-hmm. You get yourself in a couple good positions and you do some people some favors, and it's easy street. And, you know, at the time I got out, I wanted out. I had the rank of E4, and I lost it because I didn't meet their weight.
Imagine that.
Well, no. This is back when I weighed 190 fucking pounds, and I didn't meet their weight restrictions. I was too fat. 190 pounds, I was too fat. because they went by the old body index, mm-hmm. where they measured this and that, and you were supposed to be in this percentage for your height, and if you weren't, well then, you know, you were overweight or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you did the Chub Club, which you met every day at 10 o'clock, and then, 9:30, and then you exercised till 11 at lunch. You took a 2-hour lunch.
They give you that, they give you a 15-minute lunch.
So, no, you got a 2-hour lunch. From 11 to 1, everyone gets a 2-hour lunch.
I expect you to lose weight if you're eating for 2 hours.
But shit, we were eating what during that fucking 9:30 to 11? We do, hey, you're required to do a mile today. All right, so we fucking slowly walk a mile. You know, and you do a slow mile in 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you get done, you go to the all-you-can-eat pizza buffet. But still, you know, a lot of the guys that were put in the Chub Club, some were really fat. Mm-hmm. And others, you know, I weighed 190, 200 pounds. And, you know, a lot of that I gained because if you're bored out at sea, there's nothing to do. We had our own weight room, personal mm-hmm. weight room in there. And it took up 3 levels. It was, each level was about the size of my apartment, probably about 50 foot by 30 foot. Mm-hmm. And then you had a ladder you would climb down. There's another level. And the bottom level had, like, mats and bags, punching bags and whatnot. And so my first year on the ship, before I started to huff and stuff and whatnot, I get bored, I go down and work out. So I got in some pretty good shape. And then I caught mono and really got in good shape because I dropped like 30 pounds of the mono. So there was nothing left but freaking muscle. Mm-hmm. And I was considered overweight because of that. And I'm like, fuck you. You know, because I'm 5'8", which is
short.
Considered short. Mm-hmm. So at 5'8", I'm supposed to weigh like 145 pounds. There is no way in hell I'm getting to 145 pounds with the way I bulked up. Mm-hmm. You know, even after getting a mono, I got down to, it was 180, 185 pounds, and I was skinny as fuck. But because the standard said at 5'8", I'm supposed to, with this and this, I'm supposed to weigh 145 pounds. So they're like, well, you're 40 pounds overweight. You show me where I'm 40 pounds overweight. I looked good then.
Right there. And
well, yeah, now I can point it out. Hell, I can have, my balls are 20 pounds
oh,
of
hell,
it.
You
so.
Look like a pregnant chick.
Oh. Yeah, so do you, you chunk motherfucker. But, because I didn't meet that, I made my rank and I got to keep it for about 2 months. And then they said, well, no, you didn't meet your weight requirement, so they fucking stripped me of it. And at that point, I gained an attitude. Because now you're taking fucking money out of my pocket mm-hmm. by stripping my rank. And so, you know, I finally got out and whatnot. And now I look back on it, I'm like, shit, I did 5 years. I should have just stayed in another 15 and I'd have a retirement pension right mm-hmm. now. I'd be getting retirement pay doing that. You know, at 39, I'd have hit my 20 years.
Yep,
you know,
38,
I'd have hit my 20 years. And at that point, once you put 20 years in, you don't know anything else, so you're probably going to stay in until they force you out. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a 25, 30-year career. And still, you know, if I had stayed in and went 30 years, I'd have 3 more years, 2.5 more years, mm-hmm. and I'd hit a 30-year mark, which makes your pension go up even higher. You know, now I look at it, I'm like, fuck, that was cakewalk. That was stupid. I should have just fucking stayed in there compared to some of the jobs I've had since I've got out.
Mm-hmm.
That was just stupid. But
like the one you got now, you know, you just sit on your ass all day.
I do not sit on my ass. I stand around.
You build boxes all day.
I build musical instruments. You cut fucking foam. What the hell are you fucking bitching? You cut wood and make boxes all day.
I do like little patterns and stuff in all my
things. Big that you got a pattern you sit on the side of your fucking hot wire guide. And then you just drop it down and run it through and cut your part. Fuck you.
A monkey can build a box.
A monkey can build yours and masturbate at the same time.
I haven't tried that yet, but I'm sure I could.
You know, every day at 10 o'clock you do it.
Oh, hell yeah. I take my bathroom break every day. Even the bosses know. They come over here, it's 10 o'clock, he's in the bathroom.
I know, that's because I told them that. You seen Kurt? What time is it? It's 10 after 10. He's in the shitter. Wow, you got that down pretty good. Yeah, you can set your watch to it. 10 o'clock, he goes to the bathroom. All right, just tell him we're looking for him when he gets back. All right, we'll do.
Now they just leave little notes pasted everywhere. I go walking back in, Carl had a note taped to the screen walking out of the thing. I was like, okay, I got that note. I know what to do next.
Then he come in to you, type stuff on his phone, too.
And make it talk to you while you're in make the bathroom. Carl, he's lost his voice. We've said that before. And he'll go on his phone and type something that had a little robot voice in there while you're using the bathroom to ask you stuff.
And the bad thing is it's a female voice, so Kurt likes that. When you are done, please look for me.
I'm done. Thank you. That helps.
Repeat that, Carl. Hit repeat. Hit repeat. Make it go, oh.
It's sort of like weird shit, too, because I was in there one day taking a shit, and he come in, he's like, he says something, he's like, I've already cleaned the bathroom, please clean the toilet, or that last toilet that you're in. I was like, okay, man, I'll do that. Walk out there, grab some stuff, sprayed it down. That's all I'm doing, that's as clean as it's going to get.
Ah, well, at least the Mexicans we have there don't wipe their ass and
throw it on the ground.
Throw it on the ground. I've been to plants like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, will you clean the bathroom? No. Well, why not? It needs clean. Then talk to the people who throw their shit paper on the fucking... Because a lot of them come here from Mexico, and they don't have good plumbing down there. And that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They throw it down on the floor. So they get up here, and, you know, that's their habit, so...
Well, I mentioned it to Carl. I told him, I was like, you know, we all use the bathroom out here. Why don't you just put a schedule up, you know, every 2 weeks or something, you know, a different person cleans it, you know? And he won't do it. He wants to do it himself. So I'm like, hey, that's
well,
what you enjoy.
All right.
You know?
I mean, there's four of us guys.
More than that.
No, there's only four guys that actually work in the plant on a regular basis.
But yeah, I mean,
five. No, there's five.
But five people, it says, you know, 2 months worth of...
And they just hired a new guy, the new young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit on him. Make him do it all the time.
That's what I'd do.
Guy looks like a fat little Cusser Polly.
Well,
except
hired
he's Mexican.
Well, I told Carl when they hired you out here, I was like, I got somebody now below me. I was like, yeah, he gets all the shit jobs.
Whatever.
Make you do the trash and
I've done
change the blades.
I've done the trash, what, twice?
Something like that.
So
you change the blades on every time that needs changed.
You know what? I don't have a problem with that. I can kill 15 minutes changing a blade. If need be. It usually only takes about 5, but I can stretch it to 15 if need be. And there's some days that it does take a full fucking 15 because I accidentally cranked it on too tight the time before. But actually, I am the only one. Carl doesn't even change them anymore, does he?
Nope.
Fucking asshole. I don't mind that because... I get dibs on the fresh blade.
And you could have it?
What? So, like, Thursday, I didn't change the blade because I know you're going to use it all day Monday because I'm going to be in shipping. Fuck you. You're not dulling the blade up that I put on there. I'll change it Tuesday morning where I get to use it.
You can. My job is to hang the blades up on the wall. That's what Carl says. You don't want, like, them laying around anymore. The whole time, till you started there, we just, when they bring the new blades in, we'd leave them sitting on the table. And now that you're here, no, hang them up on the wall. That's your job. Like, okay, I'll do that.
Oh, well, I don't mind.
Okay, everybody, we're going to go ahead and put a pin in it right there. This is the fourth part of the Jeff Life story. Join us next week for the final part. This has been the Kurt and Jeff Show. I'm Kurt. See you next week. Have fun. Climbing a mountain that keeps getting higher. I'm playing a game where no one's supposed to win.